Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
6 minutes after two, Elisa Jaffe in this week for a vacationing Ken Schramm. It's been real fun hanging out with you in the afternoon, and you can catch me weekday mornings on 570 KVI on Smart Talk Mornings. There's a new government report out that shows our state is one of 15 states that saw the number of college degrees held by 25 to 34-year-olds go down during the recession. So this data just came out today by the U.S. Department of Education, and it's just the day before the Education Secretary Arne Duncan plans to speak at the Governor's Association meeting about raising college attainment all across the country. And this says that almost 41% of the 25 to 34-year-olds in Washington state had college degrees in 2010. About 6,000 more college graduates lived in the state in 2009. And we've heard from President Obama, and he says he wants 60% of Americans to have college degrees by the end of the decade. And right now, the only place in the U.S. that has met that goal is Washington. Today, the King County Council is meeting to talk about the regional highway system and how it's going to function for drivers. Should we have a new arena? And with us, we've got former Transportation Secretary Doug McDonald, who is on the expert review panel that meets with all the folks on the council. And we're hearing now that you can actually break it down. You know how much longer our commute will be should there be a game at a new arena.
Actually, I wish it were that simple, and I don't know that number. Now, the Seattle Times this morning published some of its ideas on the subject, but they made those up for themselves. I'm not sure they're wrong, but they are not fact. They're, suggestion about what some of the facts might look like. But we can talk a little bit about
it. Okay, so they're saying they're saying it'll be 5 to 10 minutes more to our commute should there be a game on a Sonics night if we get a new arena. Do you take issue with that, or do you think that sounds about right?
Well, here's what I know. I on this expert review panel, what I thought would be useful would be to try to make the question simpler, because there is so much talk on this thing and so little of it, you can pin down, that I couldn't pin any of it down for myself. So I tried to figure out, okay, what's the bottom line? And part of the bottom line is it depends on how many times any of these teams go to the playoffs. But the place to start is that sometimes, and weekends are a big different from weekdays, and mm-hmm. I don't think that the same problems exist on the weekends, so I've been focusing my attention on what happens weekdays, because that's when you have, business and regular commuting.
Because everybody's just been focusing on what's it mean to the port and what's it mean to the, the freight and all of that, and that happens after hours. But we're not talking about what's it mean to us when we're just trying to get onto I-90 or I-5 or head through downtown.
Well, there you go. And so what I've come up with, using the numbers that the city had, and I don't have any quarrel with them, is that sometime, depending on how many playoff games there are, between 70 and 100 new days, you're going to have a sports event, at a venue in Soto. There's 264 weekdays a year. So if you add someplace between 70 and 100 to what you got now, which is, way down at the bottom end of that, you have an idea of how many more times you're going to see the event that you worry about. But you don't know the precise answer to that, because you don't know how many games there are going to be.
And we don't know if it's at night, or we don't know if it's a day earlier in the day, because, if our rush hour is between 5 and 6, what's it mean if it's a 4 o'clock game, too?
That's a great point, because the worst events are what would happen if you had two events, and you had a baseball game and a playoff game at the arena or something like that. So you add all that up, and that gets to be even more confusing. So then I asked the question, okay, how many cars is one of the events at the arena going to draw to Soto? And the answer to that, which is pretty much right out of the report from the city, is it's going to be about 5,000 cars.
So at least 5,000 cars, because if you have 20,000 fans and they team up, right, then there'd be about...
At least, yeah, the arena event will draw 5,000 cars.
Unless most of them are Mayor Mike McGinn's friends, and then they're all riding their bikes to the game, right?
Well, that's a funny point, but let's pass that and not climb on that point. So let's just say what happens, but the interesting thing that the guy from the arena, Chris Hansen, has said, is those cars tend to come late, because basketball games start late and people don't come for batting practice. So he says, essentially, those cars will come between 6 and 7. So I thought to myself, well, I wonder how many cars are already trying to get to, through the freeway on I-5 or I-90 to compare 5,000 to it. If you asked, how many cars do you think are on I-5 at 5 o'clock, nobody would have a clue. They'd just know it's a lot. So I got the numbers. And the numbers are between 4 and 5 and between 5 and 6. Each hour, there's about 17,000 cars trying to go, south on I-5 and north on I-5 and west on I-90, all headed for ground zero.
17,000 heading in each direction? So
no,
are you
17,000
total.
Total,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, just think of everybody trying to get to the interchange through the interchange at I-90 and I-5, and it's about 17,000, 18,000 cars each hour. Well, the interesting thing is it drops off between 6 and 7, and between 6 and 7, it's about 13,000 cars an hour. So, that's pretty simple math. So then I thought to myself, well, what happens if you would add 5,000 cars between 6 and 7? And miraculously, you get right back to about the 17 or 18,000 cars that you have during rush hour. So that led me to the following speculation, which is a question, not a statement of fact.
Okay.
Does that mean that we would see the rush hour that we normally experience just on a regular day, never mind anything else, just a regular rush hour day that would be between 4 and 6 with about 17,000, 18,000 cars trying to push through there and most of it, backed up and slowed down. Now 5,000 new cars are supposed to come between 6 and 7. Does that mean the rush hour goes to 7.
So you're just saying because it's the same thing as later, and usually the rush hour decreases after 6 o'clock between 6 and 7.
Point.
So now you're saying it's just going to be the same thing, so the rush hour is extended.
And when you say what I'm
Because I was
saying,
never good in those math problems in 9th and 10th grade. I'd love to pose this to a bunch of kids at the high school.
but you just got to the simple point, which is not a statement of fact. It's the obvious question. And so the obvious question that people have to focus on is if you put those 5,000 cars on the freeway system, in the hour when everybody thinks everybody's gone home, does it just extend the commute another hour? And if that happens, when the time says it adds 5 minutes to your commute, well, that might be, depending on where your commute is and how, that's a pretty generic number.
Uh-huh.
But what we do know is that between, 4 and 6, it can take 30 or 40 minutes to get from, north of the Ship Canal Bridge or 145th or someplace like that down and through downtown. So we know that's a bad commute. But what generally happens by between 6 and 7 is that can come down to 10, 12, 15 minutes. That's like a 20-minute difference. And that's what we all know happens when traffic breaks up after the commute hour.
So we know for sure that it'll probably mean maybe 70 to 100 days of the year we'll have the same commute in the evening as we did earlier, right at the regular rush hour. But if you're heading to one of the games, you might be happier and willing to do it.
And we don't know that for sure. What we do know for sure is that's a pretty intelligent question to ask when you look at the numbers, as any of us or a 9th or 10th grader would look at the numbers saying, well, gee, those cars are going to have to go someplace, and they'll probably fill in the space that, we just freed up because we thought the commute got over.
But speaking of commute, we better get a check on traffic. That was former Transportation Secretary Doug McDonald.
Seattle's waking up to the Como Morning News 5 to 9. Right now, Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Elisa Jaffe in for Ken Schramm this afternoon. In this corner, you've got Democratic gubernatorial candidate Jay Inslee. And he has raised, about $6,667,000 for his race for governor. In this corner, you've got his Republican opponent, State Attorney General Rob McKenna. He has raised $6,676,455 so far for his race for governor. That's just about $9,000 apart. Ron Dotz, our political strategist, joining us right now. This is fascinating that it can be this close.
Yeah, it's only the beginning. The next 4 months, we're going to see, my guess, Lisa, is probably between the two of them, when the dust settles in November, we're going to see about $30 million spent on this race for governor.
Why so much money?
Well, it's expensive to advertise, and it's a very, very competitive race. And that may be the biggest part of all, because it's just, is probably one of the highest profile, in the top two or three profile governor's races in the United States. We have two very attractive candidates, both, you know, who have got lots of things to talk about. So you have a very competitive race, which the state of Washington for governor has probably not had in the last 25 or 30 years, Lisa.
If you're saying that we're going to spend close to, did you say $30
million? Between the two sides, their campaign committees, and the independent expenditures of their allies, yes, I think we're going to be somewhere between $25 and $30 million spent on this race.
What? When's the last time anything came close to that in a race for governor here?
Oh, for governor. Oh, gosh, probably not in our history, okay? I don't know.
We haven't? Because I don't even know. We haven't?
Yeah. Yeah. The last really competitive governor's race we had in the state of Washington was probably in 1984. Okay, it's a long time ago.
Well, you know, one thing, when I was reading the Publicola article on this and they broke it down, it showed that McKenna's largest contribution was $1,800.
Mm-hmm.
And then you compare that to Jay Inslee's largest contribution, that was $200,000.
Right.
So he's
right.
Getting it from the party dollars, and McKenna's getting it from the little guy? What's happening here?
Not really, because they're both going to get it from the big boys and girls.
Sure,
as well.
That's what I thought.
Okay, they really are, because right now, Republican Governors Association, I think, is already in that same piece, placed almost a $2 million buy for this fall for Rob McKenna. And I think there's another group on the other side that's somewhere in the range of $2 or $3 million for Jay Inslee. So, you know, those numbers right now may be a little bit misleading. What's really going to happen is the money's really going to start pouring in here in the next 60 to 90 days, and it's going to be coming from all over the place, again, because of the competitive nature of this race.
And I guess it just seems like it could be spent for so many other things. When I'm looking at this, it makes me hurt.
Well, you know, that's a good argument. We spend an exorbitant amount of money here getting our senators and governors elected, and look what the billions we're now spending for a president. It's just, I agree with you. I just think the amount of money it's taking now is just become surreal and obscene, and it's unfortunate because so many better uses for that money rather than how it gets spent today. But
it's almost like if you don't have money, you can't become a politician. If you don't have those big hands, you know, and those connections, it'd be hard to become elected.
Well, there's a phrase, Lisa, that I've used over the years, and it's held in good stead, and I think it's still unfortunately true today. And it goes something like this: money may not necessarily a winner make. Lack of money ensures losing in politics.
And you know what? That's probably why George Washington didn't take a paycheck as president, too, right?
Yeah. Well, the times, they are changing, okay?
They sure are.
Very expensive out there.
Ron Dotz, our political strategist, thank you for being
you
with
betcha.
Us on Newsline PM. So, again, just about $9,000 separating Inslee and McKenna, and how much they have raised for their race for governor. And Ron is saying that this could get up to $30 million that they'll be raising by the time that election comes around. Out of control spending.
Reporting the news, understanding the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Bob Dylan is questioning the police work done by the history detectives. The PBS show investigates artifacts found by viewers for historical significance, and they determined that a Fender Stratocaster, a New Jersey woman found in her attic, is the very guitar Bob Dylan played at the 1965 Newport Folk Festival when he played this song, where he famously went electric and earned boos from the crowd, but launched a whole new era in rock. Well, Dylan and his lawyer say he didn't use that guitar. That's just one of the many guitars that was stolen from him over the years.
Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
We're all waiting to find out what happens with health care reform. Will our employers make us go get insurance on our own? Will they drop that as one of our benefits? Will the prices go up? Will they go down now that we'll have these exchanges in all the states where you're supposed to have the free marketplace and you can go buy your insurance? Well, the vice president of Primera, this week said something that just made jaws drop and everybody be stunned in the room. He is the CEO of Washington State's largest individual insurance health plan, and he said he expects that customers could see increases of 50 to 70%. So when Jeff Rowe said that in front of a crowd this week at the DoubleTree Inn out at SeaTac, where they were having this conference on healthcare policies, boy, the room just looked shocked. Eric Erling is with us right now, and Eric is from Premera Blue Cross. And when your boss says something like this, I'm sure you've got to listen. Where is he getting this breakdown of seeing us have to maybe pay 50 to 70% more for our health insurance, Eric?
Sure, Lisa. Glad to be with you. So what Jeff was speaking to was actually a breakdown and some analysis that we've done internally and actually some folks around the country, including some folks that were active in passing federal health care reform, have looked at it and shown that there will be some significant premium increases because of several provisions that are in reform, the biggest of which is the requirement that we sell coverage in the exchange that is significantly more expensive than what our typical customer purchases today.
Yeah, you know, because when you read it, and the typical LifeWise customer gets a policy where, what is it, that the medical costs that are paid by the health plan are how much?
So there's a term called actuarial value that's in the law, and that's the benchmark that's being used. The uh-huh. bare minimum of coverage that we're allowed to sell in the exchange is at a 60% actuarial value. Our typical customer today purchased something that's at a 40% actuarial value. So putting aside the nuances of that technical term, we're talking about having to sell benefits that are 50% richer than what the typical customer purchases today, and that obviously results in a significant premium increase.
And then when you are not allowed to deny coverage to people with a pre-existing condition, what will that do?
Well, we do expect that a number of independent analysts around the country have taken a look at the kind of individual customer that we can expect in the exchange, and they've found that it's typically much more like a Medicaid demographic than the typical purchaser of individual coverage today, meaning these are folks that are more likely to have significant unmet and costly medical needs, so they will cost typically more per person to cover than the typical individual customer today. So that's yet another factor that will drive premiums higher in the exchange environment.
Eric Erling with Premera Blue Cross joining us right now, and his boss, the vice president of Premera, just came out this week saying, don't expect the premiums to go down with health care reform, might go up to 70% higher. But, you know, I thought with these insurance exchanges, these are the marketplaces for our insurance policies, and there's supposed to be one in every state, that was supposed to drive the costs down.
Well, that may be something that some folks have talked about. The ultimate issue is we already have a marketplace today that's competitive, where there's three local health plans that offer individual coverage, and they compete in a very competitive marketplace. So that isn't changing. What is changing is there are a number of additional rules that impact what kind of coverage we can offer. And as I've described, we're required to sell coverage that is significantly more expensive than what our customers purchase today. So it's important for policymakers to be able to understand that so they're not adding to any additional costs. And we think the big issue is we have to get to the issue of rising medical costs and address that problem, because that's one of the key drivers of the overall cost of coverage.
How much are we talking about? How much money does it cost per person to get health care? And what do you think the increase will be?
Well, so it really varies depending on what kind of plan somebody would buy. You could buy a high deductible catastrophic plan that has pretty lean benefits, and you're going to get a much lower rate depending on your age, hypothetically down in the range of $200 a month, let's say. Whereas you could go out and purchase a comprehensive plan that has much richer benefits if that's what you prefer, and you could be paying much more, $600, $800, $1,000 a month. Either way, you're looking at significant increases, because overall we have to sell more expensive coverage. But ultimately, the cost of that coverage, whatever level of benefits we have to sell, is driven by the rising cost of medical care. And so one of the things we're doing right now already is focusing on collaborating with hospitals and doctors to try and address that issue now.
Help me understand how the subsidies work, because I thought if we could, well, first of all, a lot of people can't afford health care. That's what this is all about. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to make it be more affordable. But now the law makes it so there will be subsidies in the form of tax credits for the folks who are way below federal poverty level. But do you think a lot of your purchasers will not qualify for these subsidies?
That's actually the exact issue. Subsidies will help some folks, obviously, but we did an analysis, and 75% of our current LifeWise membership is above the level at which they'd qualify for subsidies, so they would have nothing to offset this significant increase.
Because the subsidies based on sliding on a sliding scale on, when you look at our income?
Yeah, the specifics are if at 400% of the federal poverty level or below, you're eligible for a sliding scale subsidy. Above that level, you're eligible for no subsidy at all, and 75% of our customers we've analyzed are above that level. So they're not going to be eligible for any subsidy at all to offset the significant premium increase. One of the independent experts that's looked at this actually did a study in Wisconsin, and what he found was that 60% of people in the individual market would face an average premium increase of 30% even after the application of subsidies. So there's a number of folks out there saying this.
What do you expect to see at Premera Blue Cross? And are you just getting flooded with phone calls and people freaking out?
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. But I, as you mentioned, and as I think the article that brought this to attention alluded to, obviously Jeff's statement caught people's attention
sure
in the
did.
Room, and we would expect that it would lead to significant additional discussion in Olympia with policymakers, and it's obviously a point of discussion we'll want to have with hospitals and doctors we work with that provide care for our members, because obviously we're interested in controlling costs wherever we can. Our customers have been pretty clear about wanting to see that.
But now with Jeff saying these numbers, this 50 to 70% increase, who won't be affected by that?
Well, so typically when we're talking about changes under federal health care reform, the biggest changes are coming in the individual market. There's less in the way of changes, although there will be some in the small group market, and even less changes.
What do you mean the small group market?
So say an employer somewhere in the range of 2 to 50 employees.
Uh-huh.
But then if you start talking about even larger employer groups, they're impacted even less, and very large employers tend to what we call self-fund their health benefits. They pay the cost of the benefits. We simply administer them as opposed to purchasing insurance coverage.
Do you think more employers will stop carrying this as a benefit, though, and start to push their employees to get their own health care?
You know, that's an interesting question. There have been a number of independent studies by various consultants and experts in the last year that have indicated that might be a significant potential outcome, but it's probably a little too soon to tell.
You know you work in an industry where people don't trust you that much, right?
I've encountered skepticism once or twice.
I had a feeling, and I'm not saying it myself, but you know, it's pretty obvious. And what do you say to the people who are saying, oh, here the insurance companies go, just taking advantage of this situation so they can make bigger margins?
Well, you know, I think Jeff dealt with this issue directly in the Q&A at this very speech, and he was asked a question about, you know, where does the premium dollar go today? And so across our company, the premium dollar right now goes 86 cents on the dollar to pay for medical costs for our customers. Another 8 cents goes to our own administrative costs. 2 cents goes to commissions to agents that sell our products. A couple cents goes to premium taxes that we're required to pay to the state. And just 2% goes to our ongoing operating profit. So really, you're talking about 86 cents on the dollar going to medical costs. That's the real issue that we have to get to.
Eric Erling, thanks for taking time to be with us on Newsline PM. Appreciate
it. Thanks, Elisa. Glad to.
What happens next happens on the Como Afternoon News today at 3. Now, Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
12 minutes before 3, and sorry if you're getting tired about us talking about the healthcare premiums and health insurance premiums and what it means to us, but it seems like every day we are hearing something new and just want to get you the information as quickly as we can before you're blindsided by a change at work or a change when you go to get your health insurance plan. And we just heard that the CEO of Washington State's largest individual insurance health plan is saying, you know, a lot of customers might see premiums jump 50 to 70%. Well, we got the take on that from Premera, but now we wanted to hear from Michael Kreidler, the state insurance commissioner. Michael, thank you for being with us on Newsline PM. What do you think after hearing Jeff Rowe say that our insurance rates might jump up 70%?
Well, first, I'd say it's premature, very premature, to make those kind of suppositions that are based on facts that we plainly do not have yet from either the state, from the state or from the federal government at this point. It's still really very much undetermined. But perhaps even more important is that when you take a look at the, all of the people in the state of Washington who are covered by insurance one way or another, this represents less than 5% of the market. So it's a relatively small number, but it's a very fragile part of the market.
Well, talk about that, because I hear a lot of times when they say people aren't insured that some of the people who aren't insured have some of the, you know, are less healthy than those who are insured in the system today.
Well, part of the reason why you when you buy an individual health insurance product, you pay a lot relatively, though it's still relatively cheap, you still pay a lot for it is because it doesn't cover very much. And I think that people who have been motivated to get health insurance are more likely to be people that are going to experience health-related issues. I'm not sure that necessarily that the people who are not covered by health insurance today, that you can make the judgment call that they are more likely to be sicker people with more health-related problems. So I think at this point, you know, we're looking at new people that are going to wind up being insured, some 800,000 people in the state of Washington out of a million without health insurance. And of
wait,
those,
did you just say there are 800,000 in our state who don't have health insurance?
No, a million people don't have health insurance.
A million
insurance.
Don't.
But under health care reform, we're going to be looking at 800,000 people that are going to be picked up. The majority of them are going to be being picked up with health insurance, it's going to be subsidized to help make it much more affordable to them.
That seems like that's a big problem then in our state. Let's talk about that and what it means to this, you know, group of a million people who don't have health insurance.
Well, if you don't have health insurance today, are often going to look to our hospital emergency rooms for care. It's going to be much more expensive. It's not going to offer the continuity of care. It is almost inevitably not going to be as efficient or effective because it's not your family doctor providing it. It's an emergency room type setting, and it's going to be a lot more expensive. Now people are going to be able to have a doctor get regular care through regular hours as opposed to trying to access it through emergency rooms. So it's going to make a huge difference to them. And, of course, if you go into a hospital emergency room and you're suffering from a significant chronic disease, they'll stabilize you. If they don't have to admit you, they release you, and then you're back and without health insurance, more likely to come back than to an emergency room.
State Insurance Commissioner Michael Kreidler with us on Newsline PM. Well, then that makes the argument that maybe since hospitals can pass those costs on to customers when people come there and don't have insurance, that maybe hospitals could then lower some of the rates.
Well, I think that's what we're going to wind up seeing, and it's going to obviously benefit the people who pay for their health insurance themselves, is that they're going to find that they're not having to help subsidize those without health insurance.
Well, do you think they'll really do that, or just it's become the norm, and so it just it's what it is?
I think you're going to see rate reductions from the standpoint of providers, hospitals specifically, because it'll be a more competitive market, because it is a competitive market, and because you're going to be in a position where the hospitals don't have to absorb an exorbitant amount of uncompensated care, meaning people who can't pick up the cost of their hospitalizations.
What do you think about all the posturing with this back in D.C.?
Well, I'm a little bit disappointed because I think we have a real opportunity with health care reform to really reduce the number of people who are uninsured, and then with a penalty to make sure that those who are not getting health insurance are paying something to help make up for the fact that if they do wind up cost impacting the rest of us because they can't pay their medical bills, that they are at least being presented with some penalty to make sure that they do get that insurance.
People are pretty confused, though, aren't they, Michael?
Oh, absolutely. This is going to be dramatic. I mean, a recent poll I saw had 45% of the people did not even know that the U.S. Supreme Court had ruled. So that's at a pretty high level. And if you start talking then about the specifics of health care reform, it obviously becomes much more complex.
So they don't have health insurance or TV sets.
That's right.
Michael Kreidler, State Insurance Commissioner, thanks for taking time to be with us.
You've heard what's happening. Now, find out what it means to you. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Alisa Jaffe in this week for Ken Schramm, and I really think it's funny that members of Congress are just learning now that the U.S. Olympic team's opening ceremony outfits were made in China, and boy, are they furious about that.
This is America. We landed Americans on the moon. We're able to make uniforms for athletes to wear in London.
Yeah, if we can put people on the moon, we can put uniforms on our athletes, can't we?
I think it's just wrong that these uniforms are being made in China. I think we could do better. They should be made in America. And that's what we stand for. And we should be showing our best, not just athletics, but also best manufactured products.
Make it a good one.